Side 5, The Robots of Dawn. Continuing on page 161. Am I to assume instead that once she reached the age when she was to have her own establishment, she no longer felt the same affection for you that she naturally had when she was actively your daughter, living in your establishment as a dependent?
Not quite that simple. In fact, it was rather complicated. You see...
Festov seemed embarrassed.
I refused her when she offered herself to me.
She offered herself to you? Said Bailey, horrified.
That part was only natural, said Festov indifferently. She knew me best. I had instructed her in sex, encouraged her experimentation, taken her to the games of Eros, done my best for her. It was something to be expected, and I was foolish for not expecting it and letting myself be caught.
But incest?
Festov said, Incest? Oh, yes, an earthly term. On Aurora, there's no such thing, Mr. Bailey. Very few Aurorans know their immediate family. Naturally, if marriage is in question and children are applied for, there is a genealogical search, but what has that to do with social sex? No, the unnatural thing is that I refused my own daughter.
He reddened, his large ears most of all. I should hope so, muttered Bailey.
I had no decent reasons for it either, at least none that I could explain to Vasilia. It is criminal of me not to foresee the matter and prepare a foundation for a rational rejection of one so young and inexperienced, if that were necessary, that would not wound her and subject her to a fearful humiliation. I am really unbearably ashamed that I took the unusual responsibility of bringing up a child, only to subject her to such an unpalatable experience. It seemed to me that we could continue our relationship as father and daughter, as friend and friend, but she did not give up. Whenever I rejected her, no matter how affectionately I tried to do so, matters grew worse between us.
Until finally?
Finally, she wanted her own establishment. I opposed it at first, not because I didn't want her to have one, but because I wanted to reestablish our loving relationship before she left. Nothing I did helped. It was perhaps the most trying time of my life. Eventually, she simply, and rather violently, insisted on leaving, and I could hold out no longer. She was a professional roboticist by then. I am grateful that she didn't abandon the profession out of distaste for me, and she was able to found an establishment without any help from me. She did so, in fact, and since then there has been little contact between us.
Bailey said, It might be, Dr. Festov, that since she did not abandon robotics, she does not feel wholly estranged.
It is what she does best and is most interested in. It has nothing to do with me. I know that, for to begin with, I thought as you did, and I made friendly overtures, but they were not received.
Do you miss her, Dr. Festov?
Of course I miss her, Mr. Bailey. That is an example of the mistake of bringing up a child. You give in to an irrational impulse, an atavistic desire, and it leads to inspiring the child with the strongest possible feeling of love, and then subject yourself to the possibility of having to refuse that same child's first offer of herself and scarring her emotionally for life. And to add to that, you subject yourself to this thoroughly irrational feeling of regret of absence. It's something I never felt before and have never felt since. She and I have both suffered needlessly, and the fault is entirely mine.
Festov fell into a kind of rumination, and Bailey said gently, And what has all this to do with Gladia? Festov started.
Oh, I had forgotten. Well, it's rather simple. Everything I've said about Gladia is true. I liked her. I sympathized with her. I admired her talent. But in addition, she resembles Vasilia. I noticed the similarity when I saw the first hyperwave account of her arrival from Solaria. It was quite startling, and it made me take an interest.
He sighed.
When I realized that she, like Vasilia, had been sex-scarred, it was more than I could endure. I arranged to have her established near me, as you see. I have been her friend and done my best to cushion the difficulties of adapting to a strange world.
She is a daughter substitute, then?
After a fashion, yes, I suppose you could call it that, Mr. Bailey. And you have no idea how glad I am she never took it into her head to offer herself to me. To have rejected her would have been to relive my rejection of Vasilia. To have accepted her out of an inability to repeat the rejection would have embittered my life, for then I would have felt that I was doing for this stranger, this faint reflection of my daughter, what I would not do for my daughter herself. Either way, but never mind, you can see now why I hesitated to answer you at first. Somehow, thinking about it led my mind back to this tragedy in my life.
And your other daughter?
Lumen,
said Fastolf indifferently.
I never had any contact with her, though I hear of her from time to time.
She's running for political office, I understand.
A local one, on the globalist ticket.
What is that?
The globalists? They favor Aurora alone, just our own globe, you see. Aurorans are to take the lead in settling the galaxy. Others are to be barred as far as possible, particularly Earthmen. Enlightened self-interest, they call it.
This is not your view, of course.
Of course not. I am heading the Humanist Party, which believes that all human beings have a right to share in the galaxy. When I refer to my enemies, I mean the globalists.
Lumen, then, is one of your enemies.
Vasilia is one also. She is indeed a member of the Robotics Institute of Aurora, the RIA, that was founded a few years ago, and which is run by roboticists who view me as a demon to be defeated at all costs. As far as I know, however, my various ex-wives are apolitical, perhaps even humanist.
He smiled wryly and said,
Well, Mr. Bailey, have you asked all the questions you wanted to ask?
Bailey's hands aimlessly searched for pockets in his smooth, loose Auroran breeches, something he had been doing periodically since he had begun wearing them on the ship, and found none. He compromised, as he sometimes did, by folding his arms across his chest. He said, Actually, Dr. Fastolf, I'm not at all sure you have yet answered the first question. It seems to me that you never tire of evading that. Why did you give Jander to Gladia? Let's get all of it into the open, so that we may be able to see light in what now seems darkness. 29. Fastolf reddened again. It might have been anger this time, but he continued to speak softly. He said,
Do not bully me, Mr. Bailey. I have given you your answer. I was sorry for Gladia, and I thought Jander would be company for her. I have spoken more frankly to you than I would to anyone else, partly because of the position I am in, and partly because you are not an Auroran. In return, I demand a reasonable respect.
Bailey bit his lower lip. He was not on Earth. He had no official authority behind him, and he had more at stake than his professional pride. He said, I apologize, Dr. Fastolf, if I have hurt your feelings. I do not mean to imply you are being untruthful or uncooperative. Nevertheless, I cannot operate without the whole truth. Let me suggest the possible answer I am looking for, and you can then tell me if I am correct or nearly correct or totally wrong. Can it be that you have given Jander to Gladia in order that he might serve as a focus for her sexual drive, and so that she might not have occasion to offer herself to you? Perhaps that was not your conscious reason, but think about it now. Is it possible that such a feeling contributed to the gift? Fastolf's hand picked up a light and transparent ornament that had been resting on the dining room table. It turned it over and over, over and over. Except for that motion, Fastolf seemed frozen. Finally, he said,
That might be so, Mr. Bailey. Certainly, after I loaned her Jander, it was never an outright gift, incidentally, I was less concerned about her offering herself to me.
Do you know whether Gladia made use of Jander for sexual purposes?
Did you ask Gladia if she made use of him, Mr. Bailey?
That has nothing to do with my question. Do you know? Did you witness any overt sexual actions between them? Did any of your robots inform you of such? Did she herself tell you?
The answer to all those questions, Mr. Bailey, is no. If I stop to think about it, there is nothing particularly unusual about the use of robots for sexual purposes by either men or women. Ordinary robots are not particularly adapted to it, but human beings are ingenious in this respect. As for Jander, he is adapted to it because he is as human a form as we could make him.
So that he might take part in sex.
No, that was never in our minds. It was the abstract problem of building a totally human-a-form robot that exercised the late Dr. Sartan and myself.
But such humaniform robots are ideally designed for sex, are they not?
I suppose they are, and now that I allow myself to think of it, and I admit I may have had it hidden in my mind from the start, Gladia might well have used Jander so. If she did, I hope the process gave her pleasure. I would consider my loan to her a good deed if it had.
Could it have been more of a good deed than you counted upon?
In what way?
What would you say if I told you that Gladia and Jander were wife and husband? Fastolf's hand, still holding the ornament, closed convulsively upon it, held it tightly for a moment, then let it drop.
What? That's ridiculous. It is legally impossible. There is no question of children, so there can't conceivably be an application for any. Without the intention of such an application, there can be no marriage.
This is not a matter of legality, Dr. Fastolf. Gladia is a Solarian, remember, and doesn't have the Auroran outlook. It is a matter of emotion. Gladia herself told me that she considered Jander to have been her husband. I think she considers herself now his widow, and that she has had another sexual trauma, and a very severe one. If in any way you knowingly contributed to this event...
By all the stars!
Said Fastolf with unwanted emotion.
I didn't. Whatever else was in my mind, I never imagined that Gladia could fantasize marriage to a robot, however humaniform he might be. No Auroran could have imagined that.
Bailey nodded and raised his hand. I believe you. I don't think you are actor enough to be drowning me in a faked sincerity. But I had to know. It was, after all, just possible that...
No, it was not. Possible that I foresaw this situation? That I deliberately created this abominable widowhood for some reason? Never. It was not conceivable, so I did not conceive it. Mr. Bailey, whatever I meant in placing Jander in her establishment, I meant well. I did not mean this. Meaning well is a poor defense, I know, but it is all that I have to offer.
Dr. Fastolf, let us refer to that no more, said Bailey. What I have now to offer is a possible solution to the mystery. Fastolf breathed deeply and sat back in his chair.
You hinted as much when you returned from Gladius.
He looked at Bailey with a hint of savagery in his eyes.
Could you not have told me this key you have at the start? Need we have gone through all this?
I'm sorry, Dr. Fastolf. The key makes no sense without all this.
Well, then, get on with it.
I will. Jander was in a position that you, the greatest robotics theoretician in all the world, did not foresee, by your own admission. He was pleasing Gladia so well that she was deeply in love with him and considered him her husband. What if it turns out that, in pleasing her, he was also displeasing her?
I'm not sure as to your meaning.
Well, see here, Dr. Fastolf, she was rather secretive about the matter. I gather that on Aurora, sexual matters are not something one hides at all costs.
We don't broadcast it over the hyperwave, said Fastolf dryly. But we don't make a greater secret of it than we do of any other strictly personal matter. We generally know who's been whose latest partner, and if one is dealing with friends, we often get an idea of how good or how enthusiastic or how much the reverse one or the other partner, or both, might be. It's a matter of small talk on occasion.
Yes, but you knew nothing of Gladia's connection with Jander.
I suspected...
Not the same thing. She told you nothing. You saw nothing. Nor could any robots report anything. She kept it secret even from you, her best friend on Aurora. Clearly, her robots were given careful instructions never to discuss Jander, and Jander himself must have been thoroughly instructed to give nothing away.
I suppose that's a fair conclusion.
Why should she do that, Dr. Fastolf?
A Solarian sense of privacy about sex?
Isn't that the same as saying she was ashamed of it?
She had no cause to be, although the matter of considering Jander a husband would have made her a laughingstock.
She might have concealed that portion very easily without concealing everything. Suppose, in her Solarian way, she was ashamed.
Well, then?
No one enjoys being ashamed. And she might have blamed Jander for it, in the rather unreasonable way people have of seeking to attribute to others the blame for unpleasantness that is clearly their own fault.
Yes.
There might have been times when Gladia, who has a short-fused temper, might have burst into tears, let us say, and upbraided Jander for being the source of her shame and her misery. It might not have lasted long, and she might have shifted quickly to apologies and caresses, but would not Jander have clearly gotten the idea that he was actually the source of her shame and her misery?
Perhaps.
And might this not have meant to Jander that if he continued the relationship, he would make her miserable, and that if he ended the relationship, he would make her miserable? Whatever he did, he would be breaking the first law, and unable to act in any way without such a violation, he could only find refuge in not acting at all, and so went into mental freeze-out. Do you remember the story you told me earlier today of the legendary mind-reading robot who was driven into stasis by that robotics pioneer?
By Susan Galvin, yes. I see. You model your scenario on that old legend. Very ingenious, Mr. Bailey. But it won't work.
Why not? When you said only you could bring about a mental freeze-out in Jander, you did not have the faintest idea that he was involved so deeply in so unexpected a situation. It runs exactly parallel to the Susan Kelvin situation.
Let's suppose that the story about Susan Kelvin and the mind-reading robot is not merely a totally fictitious legend. Let's take it seriously. There would still be no parallel between that story and the Jander situation. In the case of Susan Kelvin, we would be dealing with an incredibly primitive robot, one that today would not even achieve the status of a toy. It could deal only qualitatively with such matters. A creates misery, not A creates misery, therefore mental freeze-out.
Bailey said, and Jander?
Any modern robot, any robot of the last century, would weigh such matters quantitatively. Which of the two situations, A or not A, would create the most misery? The robot would come to a rapid decision and opt for minimum misery. The chance that he would judge the two mutually exclusive alternatives to produce precisely equal quantities of misery is small, and even if that should turn out to be the case, the modern robot is supplied with a randomization factor. If A and not A are precisely equal misery producers according to his judgment, he chooses one or the other in a completely unpredictable way, and then follows that unquestioningly. He does not go into mental freeze-out.
Are you saying it is impossible for Jander to go into mental freeze-out? You have been saying you could have produced it.
In the case of the humaniform positronic brain, there is a way of sidetracking the randomization factor that depends entirely on the way in which that brain is constructed. Even if you know the basic theory, it is a very difficult and long-sustained process to so lead the robot down the garden path, so to speak, by a skillful succession of questions and orders as to finally induce the mental freeze-out. It is unthinkable that it can be done by accident, and the mere existence of an apparent contradiction as that produced by simultaneous love and shame could not do the trick without the most careful quantitative adjustment under the most unusual conditions. Which leaves us, as I keep saying, with indeterministic chance as the only possible way in which it happened.
But your enemies will insist that your own guilt is the more likely. Could we not, in our turn, insist that Jander was brought to mental freeze-out by the conflict brought on by Gladia's love and shame? Would this not sound plausible? And would it not win public opinion to your side?
Fastoff frowned.
Mr. Bailey, you are too eager. Think about it seriously. If we were to try to get out of our dilemma in this rather dishonest fashion, what would be the consequence? I say nothing of the shame and misery it would bring to Gladia, who would suffer not only the loss of Jander, but the feeling that she herself had brought about that loss, if, in fact, she had really felt and had somehow revealed her shame. I would not want to do that. But let us put that to one side, if we can. Consider instead that my enemies would say that I had loaned her, Jander, precisely to bring about what had happened. I would have done it, they would say, in order to develop a method for mental freeze-out in humaniform robots while escaping all apparent responsibility myself. We would be worse off than we are now, for I would not only be accused of being an underhanded intriguer, as I am now, but in addition, of having behaved monstrously toward an unsuspecting woman whom I had pretended to befriend, something I have so far been spared.
Bailey was staggered. He felt his jaw drop and his voice degenerate to a stutter.
Surely they would not...
But they would. You yourself were at least half inclined to think so not very many minutes ago.
Merely as a remote...
My enemies would not find it remote, and they would not publicize it as remote.
Bailey knew he had reddened. He felt the wave of heat and found he could not look Fastolf in the face. He cleared his throat and said,
You are right. I jumped for a way out without thinking, and I can only ask your pardon. I am deeply ashamed. There's no way out, I suppose, but the truth, if we can find it.
Fastolf said,
Don't despair. You have already uncovered events in connection with Jander that I never dreamed of. You may uncover more, and eventually what seems altogether a mystery to us now may unfold and become plain. What do you plan to do next?
But Bailey could think of nothing through the shame of his fiasco. He said,
I don't really know.
Well, then, it was unfair of me to ask. You have had a long day, and not an easy one. It is not surprising that your brain is a bit sluggish now. Why not rest, view a film, go to sleep? You will be better off in the morning.
Bailey nodded and mumbled,
Perhaps you're right.
But at the moment, he didn't think he'd be any better off in the morning at all. 30. The bedroom was cold, both in temperature and ambience. Bailey shivered slightly. So low a temperature within a room gave it the unpleasant feeling of being outside. The walls were faintly off-white and, unusual for Fastolf's establishment, were not decorated. The floor seemed, to the sight, to be of smooth ivory, but to the bare feet it felt carpeted. The bed was white, and the smooth blanket was cold to the touch. He sat down at the edge of the mattress and found it yielded very slightly to the pressure of his weight. He said to Daniil, who had entered with him, Daniil, does it disturb you when a human being tells a lie?
I am aware that human beings lie on occasion, partner Elijah. Sometimes a lie might be useful or even mandatory. My feeling about a lie depends upon the liar, the occasion, and the reason.
Can you always tell when a human being lies?
No, partner Elijah.
Does it seem to you that Dr. Fastolf often lies?
It has never seemed to me that Dr. Fastolf has told a lie.
Even in connection with Jander's death?
As far as I can tell, he tells the truth in every respect.
Perhaps he has instructed you to say that, were I to ask?
He has not, partner Elijah.
But perhaps he instructed you to say that, too.
He paused.
Again, of what use was it to cross-examine a robot? And in this particular case, he was inviting infinite regression.
He was suddenly aware that the mattress had been yielding slowly under him until it now half enfolded his hips. He rose suddenly and said,
Is there any way of warming the room, Daniil?
It will feel warmer when you are under the cover with the light out, partner Elijah.
Ah. He looked about suspiciously. Would you put the light out, Daniil, and remain in the room when you have done so?
The light went out almost at once, and Bailey realized that his supposition that this room at least was undecorated was totally wrong. As soon as it was dark, he felt he was outside. There was the soft sound of wind in trees, and the small, sleepy mutters of distant life forms. There was also the illusion of stars overhead, with an occasional drifting cloud that was just barely visible.
Put the light back on, Daniil.
The room flooded with light.
Daniil, said Bailey, I don't want any of that. I want no stars, no clouds, no sounds, no trees, no wind, no sense either. I want darkness, featureless darkness. Could you arrange that?
Certainly, partner Elijah.
Then do so. And show me how I may myself put out the light when I am ready to sleep.
I am here to protect you, partner Elijah.
Bailey said grumpily,
You can do that, I am sure, from just the other side of the door. Giscard, I imagine, will be just outside the windows, if indeed there are windows beyond the draperies.
There are. If you cross that threshold, partner Elijah, you will find a personal reserved for yourself. That section of the wall is not material, and you will move easily through it. The light will turn on as you enter, and it will go out as you leave. And there are no decorations. You will be able to shower if you wish, or do anything else that you care to before retiring or after waking. Bailey turned in the indicated direction. He saw no break in the wall, but the floor molding in that spot did show a thickening as though it were a threshold.
How do I see it in the dark, Daniil?
He asked. That section of the wall, which is not a wall, will glow faintly. As for the room light, there is this depression in the headboard of your bed, which, if you place your finger within it, will darken the room if light, or lighten it if dark.
Thank you. You may leave now.
Half an hour later, he was through with the personal and found himself huddling beneath the blanket with the light out, enveloped by a warm, spirit-hugging darkness. As Fastolf had said, it had been a long day. It was almost unbelievable that it had been only that morning that he had arrived on Aurora. He had learned a great deal, and yet none of it had done him any good. He lay in the dark and went over the events of the day in quiet succession, hoping that something might occur to him that had eluded him before. But nothing like that happened. So much for the quietly thoughtful, keen-eyed, subtle-brained Elijah Bailey of the hyperwave drama. The mattress was again half enfolding him, and it was like a warm enclosure. He moved slightly, and it straightened beneath him, then slowly molded itself to fit his new position. There was no point in trying, with his worn, sleep-seeking mind, to go over the day again, but he could not help trying a second time, following his own footsteps on this, his first day on Aurora, from the spaceport to Fastolf's establishment, then to Gladia's, then back to Fastolf. Gladia, more beautiful than he remembered, but hard, something hard about her. Or has she just grown a protective shell, poor woman? He thought warmly of her reaction to the touch of her hand against his cheek. If he could have remained with her, he could have taught her, stupid Aurorans, disgustingly casual attitude towards sex. Anything goes, which means nothing really goes. Not worthwhile. Stupid. To Fastolf, to Gladia, back to Fastolf, back to Fastolf. He moved a little, and then abstractedly felt the mattress remold again. Back to Fastolf. What happened on the way back to Fastolf? Something said, something not said. And on the ship before he ever got to Aurora. Something that fit in. Bailey was in the never-never world of half-sleep, when the mind is liberated and follows a law of its own. It is like the body, flying, soaring through the air, and liberated of gravity. Of its own accord, it was taking the events, little aspects he had not noted, putting them together, one thing adding to another, clicking into place, forming a web, a fabric. And then, it seemed to him, he heard a sound, and he roused himself to a level of wakefulness. He listened, heard nothing, and sank once more into the half-sleep to take up the line of thought. And it eluded him. It was like a work of art sinking into a morass. He could still see its outlines, the masses of color. They got dimmer, but he still knew it was there. And even as he scrambled desperately for it, it was gone altogether, and he remembered nothing of it, nothing at all. Had he actually thought of anything? Or was the memory of having done so itself an illusion born of some drifting nonsense in a mind asleep? And he was indeed asleep. When he woke briefly during the night, he thought to himself, I had an idea, an important idea. But he remembered nothing except that something had been there. He remained awake a while, staring into the darkness. If, in fact, something had been there, it would come back in time. Or it might not, Jehoshaphat. And he slept again. Chapter 8. Fastolf and Vasilia. 31. Bailey woke with a start and drew in his breath with sharp suspicion. There was a faint and unrecognizable odor in the air that vanished by his second breath. Daniil stood gravely at the side of the bed. He said, I trust, partner Elijah, that you have slept well. Bailey looked around. The drapes were still closed, but it was clearly daylight outside. Giscard was laying out clothing, totally different from shoes to jacket, from anything he had worn the day before. He said, Quite well, Daniil. Did something awaken me? There was an injection of antisomnin in the room's air circulation, partner Elijah. It activates the arousal system. We used a smaller than normal amount, since we were uncertain of your reaction. Perhaps we should have used a smaller amount still. Bailey said, It did seem to be rather like a paddle over the rear. What time is it? Daniil said, It is 0705 by Auroran measure. Physiologically, breakfast will be ready in half an hour.
He said it without a trace of humor, though a human being might have found a smile appropriate. Giscard said, his voice stiffer and a trifle less intoned than Daniil's,
Sir, friend Daniil and I may not enter the personal. If you will do so and let us know if there is anything you will need, we will supply it at once.
Yes, of course. Bailey raised himself, swung around, and got out of bed. Giscard began stripping the bed at once.
May I have your pajamas, sir?
Bailey hesitated for a moment only. It was a robot who asked, nothing more. He disrobed and handed the garment to Giscard, who took it with a small, grave nod of acceptance. Bailey looked at himself with distaste. He was suddenly conscious of a middle-aged body that was very likely in less good condition than Fastolf's, which was nearly three times as old. Automatically, he looked for his slippers and found there were none. Presumably, he needed none. The floor seemed warm and soft to his feet. He stepped into the personal and called out for instructions. From the other side of the illusory section of the wall, Giscard solemnly explained the working of the shaver, of the toothpaste dispenser, explained how to put the flushing device on automatic, how to control the temperature of the shower. Everything was on a grander and more elaborate scale than anything Earth had to offer, and there were no partitions on the other side of which he could hear the movements and involuntary sounds of someone else, something he had to ignore rigidly to maintain the illusion of privacy. It was effete, thought Bailey somberly as he went through the luxurious ritual, but it was an effeteness that, he already knew, he could become accustomed to. If he stayed here on Aurora any length of time, he would find the culture shock of returning to Earth painfully intense, particularly with respect to the personal. He hoped that the readjustment would not take long, but he also hoped that any Earth people who settled new worlds would not feel impelled to cling to the concept of community personals. Perhaps, thought Bailey, that was how one ought to define effete, that to which one can become easily accustomed. Bailey stepped out of the personal, various functions completed, chin new cropped, teeth glistening, body showered and dry. He said, Giscard, where do I find the deodorant?
Giscard said, I do not understand, sir.
Daniil said quickly, When you activated the lathering control, partner Elijah, that introduced a deodorant effect. I ask pardon for friend Giscard's failure to understand. He lacks my experience on Earth. Bailey lifted his eyebrows dubiously and began to dress with Giscard's help. He said, I see that you and Giscard are still with me every step of the way. Has there been any sign of any attempt at putting me out of the way?
Daniil said, None thus far, partner Elijah. Nevertheless, it would be wise to have friend Giscard and myself with you at all times, if that can possibly be managed.
Why is that, Daniil?
For two reasons, partner Elijah. First, we can help you with any aspect of Auroran culture or folkways with which you are unfamiliar. Second, friend Giscard in particular can record and reproduce every word of every conversation you may have. This may be of value to you. You will recall that there were times in your conversations with both Dr. Fastolf and with Miss Gladia when friend Giscard and I were at a distance or in another room.
So that conversations were not recorded by Giscard?
Actually, they were, partner Elijah, but with low fidelity, and there may be portions that will not be as clear as we would want them to be. It would be better if we stayed as close to you as is convenient.
Bailey said, Daniil, are you of the opinion that I will be more at ease if I think of you as guides and as recording devices rather than as guards? Why not simply come to the conclusion that as guards you two are completely unnecessary? Since there have been no attempts at me so far, why isn't it possible to conclude that there will be no attempts at me in the future?
No, partner Elijah, that would be incautious. Dr. Fastolf feels that you are viewed with great apprehension by his enemies. They have made attempts to persuade the chairman not to give Dr. Fastolf permission to call you in, and they will surely continue to attempt to persuade him to have you ordered back to Earth at the earliest possible moment.
That sort of peaceful opposition requires no guards.
No, sir, but if the opposition has reason to fear that you may exculpate Dr. Fastolf, it is possible that they may feel driven to extremes. You are, after all, not an Auroran, and the inhibitions against violence on our world would therefore be weakened in your case.
Bailey said dourly, The fact that I've been here a whole day and that nothing has happened should relieve their minds greatly and reduce the threat of violence considerably.
It would seem so, said Daniil,
showing no signs that he recognized the irony in Bailey's voice. On the other hand, said Bailey, if I seem to make progress, then the danger to me immediately increases.
Daniil paused to consider, then said, That would seem to be a logical consequence.
And therefore you and Giscard will come with me wherever I go, just in case I manage to do my job a little too well.
Daniil paused again, then said, Your way of putting it, Partner Elijah, puzzles me, but you seem to be correct.
In that case, said Bailey, I'm ready for breakfast, though it does take the edge off my appetite to be told that the alternative to failure is attempted assassination.
32. Fastolf smiled at Bailey across the breakfast table.
Did you sleep well, Mr. Bailey?
Bailey studied the slice of ham with fascination. It had to be cut with a knife. It was grainy. It had a discreet strip of fat running down one side. It had, in short, not been processed. The result was that it tasted hammier, so to speak.
There were also fried eggs, with the yolk a flattened semisphere in the center, rimmed by white, rather like some daisies that Ben had pointed out to him in the field back on Earth. Intellectually, he knew what an egg looked like before it was processed, and he knew that it contained both a yolk and a white, but he had never seen them still separate when ready to eat. Even on the ship coming here, and even on Solaria, eggs, when served, were scrambled.
He looked up sharply at Fastolf.
Pardon me?
Fastolf said patiently. Did you sleep well?
Yes, quite well. I would probably still be sleeping if it hadn't been for the antisomnin.
Ah, yes. Not quite the hospitality a guest has the right to expect, but I felt you might want an early start.
You are entirely right, and I'm not exactly a guest either.
Fastolf ate in silence for a moment or two. He sipped at his hot drink, then said,
Has any enlightenment come overnight? Have you awakened, perhaps, with a new perspective, a new thought?
Bailey looked at Fastolf suspiciously, but the other's face reflected no sarcasm. As Bailey lifted his drink to his lips, he said,
I'm afraid not. I am as ineffectual now as I was last night.
He sipped and involuntarily made a face.
Fastolf said, I'm sorry you find the drink unpalatable.
Bailey grunted and cautiously tasted it again.
Fastolf said, It is simply coffee, you know, decaffeinated.
Bailey frowned.
It doesn't taste like coffee, and... Pardon me, Dr. Fastolf. I don't want to begin to sound paranoid, but Daniil and I have just had a half-joking exchange on the possibility of violence against me. Half-joking on my part, of course, not on Daniil's. And it is in my mind that one way they might get at me is...
His voice trailed away. Fastolf's eyebrows moved upward. He reached for Bailey's coffee with a murmur of apology and smelled it. He then ladled out a small portion by spoon and tasted it. He said,
Perfectly normal, Mr. Bailey. This is not an attempt at poisoning.
Bailey said,
I'm sorry to behave so foolishly, since I know this has been prepared by your own robots. But are you certain?
Fastolf smiled.
Robots have been tampered with before now. However, there has been no tampering this time. It is just that coffee, although universally popular on the various worlds, comes in different strains. It is notorious that each human being prefers the coffee of his own world. I'm sorry, Mr. Bailey. I have no earth strain to give you. Would you prefer milk? That is relatively constant from world to world. Fruit juice? Aurora's grape juice is considered superior throughout the worlds, generally. There are some who hint darkly that we allow it to ferment somewhat, but that, of course, is not true. Water?
I'll try your grape juice.
Bailey looked at the coffee dubiously.
I suppose I ought to try to get used to this.
Not at all, said Fastolf. Why seek out the unpleasant if that is unnecessary? And so...
His smile seemed a bit strained as he returned to his earlier remark.
Night and sleep have brought no useful reflection to you?
I'm sorry, said Bailey. Then, frowning at a dim memory, although...
Yes?
I have the impression that... Just before falling asleep, in the free association limbo between sleep and waking, it seemed to me that I had something.
Indeed? What?
I don't know. The thought drove me into wakefulness, but didn't follow me there. Or else some imagined sound distracted me. I don't remember. I snatched at the thought, but didn't retrieve it. It's gone. I think that this sort of thing is not uncommon.
Fastolf looked thoughtful.
Are you sure of this?
Not really. The thought grew so tenuous, so rapidly, I couldn't even be sure that I had actually had it. And even if I had, it may have seemed to make sense to me, only because I was half asleep. If it were repeated to me now in broad daylight, it might make no sense at all.
But whatever it was, and however fugitive, it would have left a trace, surely?
I imagine so, Dr. Fastolf, in which case it will come to me again. I'm confident of that.
Ought we to wait?
What else can we do?
There's such a thing as a psychic probe.
Bailey sat back in his chair and stared at Fastolf for a moment.
He said, I've heard of it, but it isn't used in police work on Earth.
We're not on Earth, Mr. Bailey,
said Fastolf softly.
It can do brain damage. Am I not right?
Not likely in the proper hands.
Not impossible, even in the proper hands, said Bailey. It's my understanding that it cannot be used on Aurora except under sharply defined conditions. Those it is used on must be guilty of a major crime, or must...
Yes, Mr. Bailey, but that refers to Aurorans. You are not an Auroran.
You mean because I'm an Earthman, I'm to be treated as inhuman?
Fastolf smiled and spread his hands.
Come, Mr. Bailey, it was just a thought. Last night you were desperate enough to suggest trying to solve our dilemma by placing Gladia in a horrible and tragic position. I was wondering if you were desperate enough to risk yourself.
Bailey rubbed his eyes and, for a minute or so, remained silent. Then, in an altered voice, he said,
I was wrong last night. I admitted it. As for this matter now, there is no assurance that what I thought of when half asleep had any relevance to the problem. It may have been pure fantasy, illogical nonsense. There may have been no thought at all, nothing. Would you consider it wise, for so small a likelihood of gain, to risk damage to my brain when it is upon that for which you say you depend for a solution to the problem?
Fastolf nodded.
You plead your case eloquently, and I was not really serious.
Thank you, Dr. Fastolf.
But where are we to go from here?
For one thing, I wish to speak to Gladia again. There are points concerning which I need clarification.
You should have taken them up last night.
So I should, but I had more than I could properly absorb last night, and there were points that escaped me. I am an investigator and not an infallible computer.
Fastolf said,
I was not imputing blame. It's just that I hate to see Gladia unnecessarily disturbed. In view of what you told me last night, I can only assume she must be in a state of deep distress.
Undoubtedly. But she is also desperately anxious to find out what happened. Who, if anyone, killed the one she viewed as her husband? That's understandable, too. I'm sure she'll be willing to help me. And I wish to speak to another person as well.
To whom?
To your daughter, Vasilia.
To Vasilia? Why? What purpose will that serve?
She is a roboticist. I would like to talk to a roboticist other than yourself.
I do not wish that, Mr. Bailey.
They had finished eating. Bailey stood up.
Dr. Fastolf, once again I must remind you that I am here at your request. I have no formal authority to do police work. I have no connection with any Auroran authorities. The only chance I have of getting to the bottom of this miserable mess is to hope that various people will voluntarily cooperate with me and answer my questions. If you stop me from attempting this, then it is clear that I can get no farther than I am right now, which is nowhere. It will also look extremely bad for you, and therefore for Earth. So I urge you not to stand in my way. If you make it possible for me to interview anyone I wish, or even simply try to make it possible by interceding on my behalf, then the people of Aurora will surely consider that to be a sign of self-conscious innocence on your part. If you hamper my investigation, on the other hand, to what conclusion can they come but that you are guilty and fear exposure?
Fastolf said, with poorly suppressed annoyance,
I understand that, Mr. Bailey. But why Vasilia? There are other roboticists.
Vasilia is your daughter. She knows you. She might have strong opinions concerning the likelihood of your destroying a robot. Since she is a member of the Robotics Institute and on the side of your political enemies, any favorable evidence she may give would be persuasive.
And if she testifies against me?
We'll face that when it comes. Would you get in touch with her and ask her to receive me?
Fastolf said resignedly,
I will oblige you, but you are mistaken if you think I can easily persuade her to see you. She may be too busy, or think she is. She may be away from Aurora. She may simply not wish to be involved. I tried to explain last night that she has reason, thinks she has reason, to be hostile to me. My asking her to see you may indeed impel her to refuse, merely as a sign of her displeasure with me.
Would you try, Dr. Fastolf?
Fastolf sighed.
I will try while you're at Gladius. I presume you wish to see her directly? I might point out that a tri-dimensional viewing would do. The image is high enough in quality so that you will not be able to tell it from personal presence.
I'm aware of that, Dr. Fastolf, but Gladia is a Solarian and has unpleasant associations with tri-dimensional viewing. And in any case, I am of the opinion that there is an intangible additional effectiveness in being within touching distance. The present situation is too delicate, and the difficulty is too great for me to want to give up that additional effectiveness.
Well, I'll alert Gladia.
He turned away, hesitated, and turned back.
But, Mr. Bailey...
Yes, Dr. Fastolf?
Last night you told me that the situation was serious enough for you to disregard any convenience it might cause Gladia. There were, you pointed out, greater things at stake.
That's so, but you can rely on me not to disturb her if I can help it.
I am not talking about Gladia now. I merely warn you that this essentially proper view of yours should be extended to myself. I don't expect you to worry about my convenience or pride if you should get a chance to talk to Vasilia. I don't look forward to the results, but if you do talk to her, I will have to endure any ensuing embarrassment, and you must not seek to spare me. Do you understand?
To be perfectly honest, Dr. Fastolf, it was never my intention to spare you. If I have to weigh your embarrassment or shame against the welfare of your policies and against the welfare of my world, I would not hesitate a moment to shame you.
Good. And, Mr. Bailey, we must extend that attitude also to yourself. Your convenience must not be allowed to stand in the way.
It wasn't allowed to do so when you decided to have me brought here without consulting me.
I'm referring to something else. If, after a reasonable time, not a long time, but a reasonable time, you make no progress toward a solution, we will have to consider the possibilities of psychic probing after all. Our last chance might be to find out what it is your mind knows that you do not know it knows.
It may know nothing, Dr. Fastolf.
Fastolf looked at Bailey sadly.
Agreed. But as you said concerning the possibility of Vasilia testifying against me, we'll face that when it comes.
He turned away again and walked out of the room.
Bailey looked after him thoughtfully. It seemed to him now that if he made progress, he would face physical reprisals of an unknown but possibly dangerous kind. And if he did not make progress, he would face the psychic probe, which could scarcely be better. Jehoshaphat, he muttered softly to himself.
33. The walk to Gladius seemed shorter than it had on the day before. The day was sunlit and pleasant again, but the vista looked not at all the same. The sunlight slanted from the opposite direction, of course, and the coloring seemed slightly different. It could be that the plant life looked a bit different in the morning than in the evening, or smelled different. Bailey had on occasion thought that of Earth's plant life as well, he remembered. Daniil and Giscard accompanied him again, but they traveled more closely to him and seemed less intensely alert. Bailey said idly, "Does the sun shine here all the time?"
"It does not, partner Elijah," said Daniil. "Were it to do so, that would be disastrous for the plant world and therefore for humanity. The prediction is in fact for the sky to cloud over in the course of the day."
"What was that?" asked Bailey, startled. A small and gray-brown animal was crouched in the grass. Seeing them, it hopped away in leisurely fashion.
"A rabbit, sir," said Giscard. Bailey relaxed. He had seen them in the fields of Earth, too.
Gladia was not waiting for them at the door this time, but she was clearly expecting them. When a robot ushered them in, she did not stand up, but said, with something between crossness and weariness,
"Dr. Fastolf told me you had to see me again. What now?"
She was wearing a robe that clung tightly to her body and was clearly wearing nothing underneath. Her hair was pulled back shapelessly, and her face was pallid. She looked more drawn than she had the day before, and it was clear that she had had little sleep. Daniil, remembering what had happened the day before, did not enter the room. Giscard entered, however, glanced keenly about, then retired to a wall niche. One of Gladia's robots stood in another niche. Bailey said, "I'm terribly sorry, Gladia, to have to bother you again." Gladia said, "I forgot to tell you last night that after Jander is torched, he will, of course, be recycled for use in the robot factories again. It will be amusing, I suppose, to know that each time I see a newly formed robot, I can take time to realize that many of Jander's atoms form part of him." Bailey said,
We ourselves, when we die, are recycled, and who knows what atoms of whom are in you and me right now, or in whom ours will someday be.
You are very right, Elijah, and you remind me how easy it is to philosophize over the sorrows of others.
That is right, too, Gladia, but I did not come to philosophize.
Do what you came to do, then.
I must ask questions.
Weren't yesterday's enough? Have you spent the time since then in thinking up new ones?
In part, yes, Gladia. Yesterday you said that even after you were with Jander, as wife and husband, there were men who offered themselves to you and that you refused. It is that which I must question you about.
Why?
Bailey ignored the question.
Tell me, he said, how many men offered themselves to you during the time you were married to Jander?
I don't keep records, Elijah. Three or four.
Were any of them persistent? Did anyone offer himself more than once?
Gladia, who had been avoiding his eyes, now looked at him full and said, Have you talked to others about this?
Bailey shook his head. I have talked on this subject to no one but you. From your question, however, I suspect that there was at least one who was persistent.
One. Santorix Grimianus.
She sighed. Aurorans have such peculiar names, and he was peculiar for an Auroran.
I had never met one as repetitious in the matter as he. He was always polite, always accepted my refusal with a small smile and a stately bow, and then, as like as not, he would try again the next week or even the next day. The mere repetition was a small discourtesy. A decent Auroran would accept a refusal permanently, unless the prospective partner made it reasonably plain there was a change of mind.
Tell me again, did those who offered themselves to you know of your relationship with Jander?
It was not something I mentioned in casual conversation.
Well then, consider this Grimianus specifically. Did he know that Jander was your husband?
I never told him so.
Don't dismiss it like that, Gladia. It's not a matter of his being told. Unlike the others, he offered himself repeatedly. How often would you say, by the way, three times, four, how many?
I did not count, said Gladia wearily. It might have been a dozen times or more. If he weren't a likable person otherwise, I would have had my robots bar the establishment to him.
Ah, but you didn't. And it takes time to make multiple offerings. He came to see you. He encountered you. He had time to note Jander's presence and how you behaved to him. Might he not have guessed at the relationship?
Gladia shook her head. I don't think so. Jander never intruded when I was with any human being.
Were those your instructions? I presume they must have been.
They were, and before you suggest I was ashamed of the relationship, it was merely an attempt to avoid bothersome complications. I have retained some instinct of privacy about sex that Aurorans don't have.
Think again. Might he have guessed? Here he is, a man in love.
In love?
The sound she made was almost a snort. What do Aurorans know of love?
A man who considers himself in love. You are not responsive. Might he not, with the sensitivity and suspicion of a disappointed lover, have guessed? Consider. Did he ever make any roundabout reference to Jander? Anything to cause you the slightest suspicion?
No, no. It would be unheard of for any Auroran to comment adversely on the sexual preferences or habits of another.
Not necessarily adversely. A humorous comment, perhaps. Any indication that he suspected the relationship?
No.
If young Grimianus had ever breathed a word of that sort, he would never have seen the inside of my establishment again, and I would have seen to it that he never approached me again. But he wouldn't have done anything of the sort. He was the soul of eager politeness to me.
You say young. How old is this Grimianus?
About my age. 35, perhaps even a year or two younger.
A child, said Bailey, sadly. Even younger than I am. But at that age... Suppose he guessed at your relationship with Jander and said nothing at all. Might he not nevertheless have been jealous?
Jealous?
It occurred to Bailey that the word might have little meaning on Aurora or Solaria.
Angered that you should prefer another to himself.
Gladius said sharply, I know the meaning of the word jealous.
I repeated it only out of surprise that you should think any Auroran was jealous. On Aurora, people are not jealous over sex. Over other things, certainly, but not over sex. There was a definite sneer upon her face. Even if he were jealous, what would it matter? What could he do?
Wasn't it possible he might have told Jander that the relationship with a robot would endanger your position on Aurora?
That would not have been true.
Jander might have believed it, if he were told so. Believed he was endangering you, harming you. Might not that have been the reason for the mental freeze-out?
Jander would never have believed that. He made me happy every day he was my husband, and I told him so.
Bailey remained calm. She was missing the point, but he would simply have to make it clearer. I am sure he believed you, but he might also feel impelled to believe someone else who told him the reverse. If he were then caught in an unbearable first law dilemma.
Gladia's face contorted, and she shrieked, "That's mad! You're just telling me the old fairy tale of Susan Calvin and the mind-reading robot. No one over the age of 10 can possibly believe that."
"Isn't it possible that..."
"No, it isn't. I'm from Solaria, and I know enough about robots to know it isn't possible. It would take an incredible expert to tie first law knots in a robot. Dr. Fastolf might be able to do it, but certainly not Santorix Gromianus. Gromianus is a stylist. He works on human beings. He cuts hair, designs clothing. I do the same, but at least I work on robots. Gromianus has never touched a robot. He knows nothing about them, except to order one to close the window or something like that. Are you trying to tell me that it was the relationship between Jander and me? Me? She tapped herself harshly on the breastbone with one rigid finger, the swells of her small breasts scarcely showing under her robe, that caused Jander's death?
It was nothing you did knowingly, said Bailey, wanting to stop but unable to quit probing. What if Gromianus had learned from Dr. Fastolf how to...
Gromianus didn't know Dr. Fastolf and couldn't have understood anything Dr. Fastolf might have told him anyhow.
You can't know for certain what Gromianus might or might not understand. And as for not knowing Dr. Fastolf, Gromianus must have been frequently in your establishment if he hounded you so, and...
And Dr. Fastolf was almost never in my establishment. Last night, when he came with you, it was only the second time he had crossed my threshold. He was afraid that to be too close to me would drive me away. He admitted that once. He lost his daughter that way. He thought something foolish like that. You see, Elijah, when you live several centuries, you have plenty of time to lose thousands of things. Be thankful for short life, Elijah.
She was weeping uncontrollably. Bailey looked and felt helpless.
I'm sorry, Gladia. I have no more questions. Shall I call a robot? Will you need help?
She shook her head and waved her hand at him.
Just go away, go away, she said in a strangled voice. Go away.
Bailey hesitated, and then strode out of the room, taking one last uncertain look at her as he walked out the door. Giscard followed in his footsteps, and Daniil joined him as he left the house. He scarcely noticed. It occurred to him, abstractedly, that he was coming to accept their presence as he would have that of his shadow or of his clothing, that he was reaching a point where he would feel bare without them. He walked rapidly back toward the Fastolf establishment, his mind churning. His desire to see Vasilia had at first been a matter of desperation, a lack of any other object of curiosity. But now things had changed. There was just a chance that he had stumbled on something vital.
34. Fastolf's homely face was set in grim lines when Bailey returned.
Any progress?
He asked. I eliminated part of a possibility, perhaps.
Part of a possibility? How do you eliminate the other part? Better yet, how do you establish a possibility?
Bailey said, by finding it impossible to eliminate a possibility, a beginning is made at establishing one.
And if you find it impossible to eliminate the other part of the possibility you mysteriously mentioned?
Bailey shrugged. Before we waste our time considering that, I must see your daughter.
Fastolf looked dejected.
Well, Mr. Bailey, I did as you asked me to do and tried to contact her. It was necessary to awaken her.
You mean she is in part of the planet where it is night? I hadn't thought of that.
Bailey felt chagrined.
I'm afraid I'm fool enough to imagine I'm on Earth still. In underground cities, day and night lose their meaning, and time tends to be uniform.
It's not that bad. EOS is the robotic center of Aurora, and you'll find few roboticists who live out of it. She was simply sleeping, and being awakened did not improve her temper, apparently. She would not speak to me.
Call again, said Bailey urgently.
I spoke to her secretarial robot, and there was an uncomfortable relaying of messages. She made it quite plain she will not speak to me in any fashion. She was a little more flexible with you.
The robot announced that she would give you 5 minutes on her private viewing channel if you call...
Fastolf consulted the time strip on the wall.
In half an hour. She will not see you in person under any conditions.
The conditions are insufficient, and so is the time. I must see her in person for as long as is needed. Did you explain the importance of this, Dr. Fastolf?
I tried. She is not concerned.
You are her father, surely.
She is less inclined to bend her decision for my sake than for a randomly chosen stranger. I knew this, so I made use of Giscard.
Giscard?
Oh, yes. Giscard is a great favorite of hers. When she was studying robotics at the university, she took the liberty of adjusting some minor aspects of his programming. And nothing makes for a closer relationship with a robot than that. Except for Gladys' method, of course. It was almost as though Giscard were Andrew Martin.
Who is Andrew Martin?
Was, not is, said Fastolf. You have never heard of him?
Never.
How odd. These ancient legends of ours all have Earth as their setting, yet on Earth they are not known. Andrew Martin was a robot who gradually, step by step, was supposed to have become humaniform. To be sure, there have been humaniform robots before Daniil, but they were all simple toys, little more than automatons. Nevertheless, amazing stories are told of the abilities of Andrew Martin, a sure sign of the legendary nature of the tale. There was a woman who was part of the legends who was usually known as Little Miss. The relationship is too complicated to describe now, but I suppose that every little girl on Aurora has daydreamed of being Little Miss and of having Andrew Martin as a robot. Vasilia did, and Giscard was her Andrew Martin.
Well, then?
I asked her robot to tell her that you would be accompanied by Giscard. She hasn't seen him in years, and I thought that might lure her into agreeing to see you.
But it didn't, I presume.
It didn't.
Then we must think of something else. There must be some way of inducing her to see me.
Fastolf said, Perhaps you will think of one. In a few minutes you will view her on Trimensic, and you will have 5 minutes to convince her that she ought to see you personally.
5 minutes? What can I do in 5 minutes?
I don't know. It is better, after all, than nothing.
35. 15 minutes later, Bailey stood before the trimensional viewing screen, ready to meet Vasilia Fastolf. Dr. Fastolf had left, saying with a wry smile that his presence would certainly make his daughter less amenable to persuasion. Nor was Daniil present. Only Giscard remained behind to keep Bailey company. Giscard said, Dr. Vasilia's trimensic channel is open for reception. Are you ready, sir?
As ready as I can be, said Bailey grimly.
He had refused to sit, feeling he might be more imposing if he were standing. How imposing could an Earthman be? The screen grew bright as the rest of the room dimmed, and a woman appeared, in rather uncertain focus at first. She was standing facing him, her right hand resting on a laboratory bench laden with sets of diagrams. No doubt she planned to be imposing, too. As the focus sharpened, the edges of the screen seemed to melt away, and the image of Vasilia, if it were she, deepened and became three-dimensional. She was standing in the room with every sign of solid reality, except that the decor of the room she was in did not match the room Bailey was in, and the break was a sharp one. She was wearing a dark brown skirt that divided into loose trouser legs that were semi-transparent, so that her legs from mid-thigh down were shadowily visible. Her blouse was tight and sleeveless, so that her arms were bare to the shoulder. Her neckline was low, and her hair, quite blonde, was in tight curls. She had none of her father's plainness, and certainly not his large ears. Bailey could only assume she had a beautiful mother, and was fortunate in the allotment of genes. She was short, and Bailey could see a remarkable resemblance to Gladia in her facial features, although her expression was far colder and seemed to bear the mark of a dominating personality. She said sharply, Are you the Earthman come to solve my father's problems?
Yes, Dr. Fastolf, said Bailey in an equally clipped manner.
You may call me Dr. Vasilia. I do not wish the confusion of being mistaken for my father.
Dr. Vasilia, I must have a chance to deal with you face to face for a reasonably extended period.
No doubt you feel that. You are, of course, an Earthman and a certain source of infection.
I have been medically treated, and I am quite safe to be with. Your father has been constantly with me for over a day.
My father pretends to be an idealist and must do foolish things at times to support the pretense. I will not imitate him.
I take it you do not wish him harm. You will bring him harm if you refuse to see me.
You are wasting time. I will not see you except in this manner, and half the period I have allotted is gone. If you wish, we can stop this now if you find it unsatisfactory.
Guiscard is here, Dr. Vasilia, and would like to urge you to see me.
Guiscard stepped into the field of vision.
Good morning, little miss, he said in a low voice.
For a moment, Vasilia looked embarrassed, and when she spoke, it was in a somewhat softer tone.
I am glad to view you, Guiscard, and will see you any time you wish, but I will not see this Earthman, even at your urging.
In that case, said Bailey, throwing in all his reserves desperately, I must take the case of Santorix Gramianus to the public without the benefit of having consulted you.
Vasilia's eyes widened, and her hand on the table lifted upward and clenched into a fist.
What is this about Gramianus?
Only that he is a handsome young man, and he knows you well. Am I to deal with these matters without hearing what you have to say?
I will tell you right now that...
No, said Bailey loudly. You will tell me nothing unless I see you face to face.
Her mouth twitched.
I will see you then, but I will not remain with you one moment more than I choose, I warn you. And bring Guiscard.
The trimensional connection broke off with a snap, and Bailey felt himself turn dizzy at the sudden change in background that resulted. He made his way to a chair and sat down. Guiscard's hand was on his elbow, making certain that he reached the chair safely.
Can I help you in any way, sir?
He asked.
I'm all right, said Bailey. I just need to catch my breath.
Dr. Fastolf was standing before him.
My apologies again for failure in my duties as a host. I listened on an extension that was equipped to receive and not transmit. I wanted to see my daughter even if she didn't see me.
I understand, said Bailey, panting slightly. If manners dictate that what you did requires an apology, then I forgive you.
But what is this about Santorix Gramianus? The name is unfamiliar to me.
Bailey looked up at Fastolf and said, Dr. Fastolf, I heard his name from Gladia this morning. I know very little about him, but I took the chance of saying what I did to your daughter anyway. The odds were heavily against me, but the results were what I wanted them to be, nevertheless. As you see, I can make useful deductions even when I have very little information, so you had better leave me in peace to continue to do so. Please, in the future, cooperate to the full, and make no further mention of a psychic probe.
Fastolf was silent, and Bailey felt a grim satisfaction at having imposed his will first on the daughter, then on the father. How long he could continue to do so, he did not know. Chapter 9. Vasilia. 36.
Bailey paused at the door of the airfoil and said firmly, Guiscard, I do not wish the windows opacified. I do not wish to sit in the back. I want to sit in the front seat and observe the outside. Since I will be sitting between you and Daniil, I should be safe enough unless the car itself is destroyed. And in that case, we will all be destroyed, and it won't matter whether I am in front or in back.
Guiscard responded to the force of the statement by retreating into greater respectfulness.
Sir, if you should feel ill...
Then you will stop the car, and I will climb into the back seat, and you can opacify the rear windows. Or you needn't even stop. I can climb over the front seat while you are moving. The point is, Guiscard, that it is important for me to become as acquainted with Aurora as is possible. And it is important for me, in any case, to become accustomed to the outside. I am stating this as an order, Guiscard.
Daniil said softly, Partner Elijah is quite correct in his request, friend Guiscard. He will be reasonably safe. Guiscard, perhaps reluctantly, Bailey could not interpret the expression on his not-quite-human face, gave in and took his place at the controls. Bailey followed and looked out of the clear glass of the windshield without quite the assurance he had presented in his voice. However, the pressure of a robot on either side was comforting. The car rose on its jets of compressed air and swayed a bit as though it were finding its footing. Bailey felt a queasy sensation in the pit of his stomach and tried not to regret his brave performance of moments before. There was no use trying to tell himself that Daniil and Guiscard showed no signs of fear and should be imitated. They were robots and could not feel fear. And then the car moved forward suddenly, and Bailey felt himself pushed hard against the seat. Within a minute, he was moving at as fast a speed as he had ever experienced on the expressways of the city. A wide, grassy road stretched out ahead. The speed seemed the greater for the fact that there were none of the friendly lights and structures of the city on either side, but rather wide gulfs of greenery and irregular formations. Bailey fought to keep his breath steady and to talk as naturally as he might of neutral things. He said, "We don't seem to be passing any farmland, Daniil. This seems to be unused land."
Daniil said, "This is city territory, Partner Elijah. It is privately owned parkland and estates."
"City?" Bailey could not accept the word. He knew what a city was.
"Eos is the largest and most important city on Aurora, the first to be established. The Auroran World Legislature sits here. The chairman of the legislature has his estate here, and we will be passing it."
"Not only a city, but the largest." Bailey looked about to either side. "I was under the impression that the Fastolf and Gladia establishments were on the outskirts of Eos. I should think we would have passed the city limits by now."
"Not at all, Partner Elijah. We're passing through its center. The limits are 7 kilometers away, and our destination is nearly 40 kilometers beyond that."
"The center of the city? I see no structures."
"They are not meant to be seen from the road, but there's one you can make out between the trees. That is the establishment of Fuad Laborde, a well-known writer."
"Do you know all the establishments by sight?"
"They are in my memory banks," said Daniil solemnly.
"There's no traffic on the road. Why is that?"
"Long distances are covered by air cars or magnetic subcars. Trimensional connections..."
"They call it viewing on Solaria," said Bailey.
"And here, too, in informal conversation, but TVC more formally. That takes care of much communication. Finally, Aurorans are fond of walking, and it is not unusual to walk several kilometers for social visiting, or even for business meetings, where time is not of the essence."
"And we have to get somewhere that's too far to walk, too close for air cars, and trimensional viewing is not wanted, so we use a ground car."
"An airfoil, more specifically, Partner Elijah, but that qualifies as a ground car, I suppose."
"How long will it take to reach Vasilia's establishment?"
"Not long, Partner Elijah. She is at the Robotics Institute, as perhaps you know."
There were some moments of silence, and then Bailey said, "It looks cloudy near the horizon there." Giscard negotiated a curve at high speed, the airfoil tipping through an angle of some 30 degrees. Bailey choked back a moan and clung to Daniil, who flung his left arm about Bailey's shoulders and held him in a strong, vice-like grip, one hand on each shoulder. Slowly, Bailey let out his breath as the airfoil righted itself.
Daniil said, "Yes, those clouds will bring precipitation later in the day, as predicted."
Bailey frowned. He had been caught in the rain once, during his experimental work in the field outside, on Earth. It was like standing under a cold shower with his clothes on. There had been sheer panic for a moment when he realized that there was no way in which he could reach for any controls that would turn it off. The water would come down forever. Then everyone was running, and he ran with them, making for the dryness and controllability of the city. But this was Aurora, and he had no idea what one did when it began to rain, and there was no city to escape into. Run into the nearest establishment? Would refugees automatically be welcome? Then there was another brief turn, and Giscard said, "Sir, we are in the parking lot of the Robotics Institute. We can now enter and visit the establishment that Dr. Vasilia maintains on the Institute grounds." Bailey nodded. The trip had taken something between 15 and 20 minutes, as nearly as he could judge, Earth time, and he was glad it was over. He said rather breathlessly, "I want to know something about Dr. Fastolf's daughter before I meet her. You did not know her, did you, Daniil?"
Daniil said, "At the time I came into existence, Dr. Fastolf and his daughter had been separated for a considerable time. I have never met her."
"That is for you, Giscard. You and she knew each other well, is that not so?"
"It is so, sir," said Giscard impassively.
"And were fond of each other?"
"I believe, sir," said Giscard, "that it gave Dr. Fastolf's daughter pleasure to be with me."
"Did it give you pleasure to be with her?"
Giscard seemed to pick his words. "It gives me a sensation that I think is what human beings mean by pleasure to be with any human being."
"But more so with Vasilia, I think. Am I right?"
"Her pleasure at being with me, sir," said Giscard, "did seem to stimulate those positronic potentials that produce actions in me that are equivalent to those that pleasure produces in human beings, or so I was once told by Dr. Fastolf."
Bailey said suddenly, "Why did Vasilia leave her father?"
Giscard said nothing.
Bailey said, with the sudden peremptoriness of an Earthman addressing a robot,
I asked you a question, boy.
Giscard turned his head and stared at Bailey, who, for a moment, thought the glow in the robot's eyes might be brightening into a blaze of resentment at the demeaning word. However, Giscard spoke mildly, and there was no readable expression in his eyes when he said,
I would like to answer, sir, but in all matters concerning that separation, Miss Vasilia ordered me at that time to say nothing.
But I'm ordering you to answer me, and I can order you very firmly indeed if I wish to.
Giscard said, I am sorry. Miss Vasilia, even at that time, was skilled in robotics, and the orders she gave me were sufficiently powerful to remain despite anything you are likely to say, sir.
Bailey said, She must have been skilled in robotics, since Dr. Faustoff told me she reprogrammed you on occasion.
It was not dangerous to do so, sir. Dr. Faustoff himself could always correct any errors.
Did he have to?
He did not, sir.
What was the nature of the reprogramming?
Minor matters, sir.
Perhaps, but humor me, just what was it she did?
Giscard hesitated, and Bailey knew what that meant at once. The robot said, I fear that any questions concerning the reprogramming cannot be answered by me.
You were forbidden?
No, sir, but the reprogramming automatically wipes out what went before. If I am changed in any particular, it would seem to me that I have always been as changed, and I would have no memory of what I was before I was changed.
Then how do you know the reprogramming was minor?
Since Dr. Faustoff never saw any need of correcting what Miss Vasilia did, or so he once told me, I can only suppose the changes were minor. You might ask Miss Vasilia, sir.
I will, said Bailey.
I fear, however, that she will not answer, sir.
Bailey's heart sank. So far, he had questioned only Dr. Faustoff, Gladia, and the two robots, all of whom had overriding reasons to cooperate. Now, for the first time, he would be facing an unfriendly subject.
37. Bailey stepped out of the airfoil, which was resting on a grassy plot, and felt a certain pleasure in feeling solidity beneath his feet. He looked around in surprise, for the structures were rather thickly spread, and to his right was a particularly large one, built plainly, rather like a huge right-angled block of metal and glass.
Is that the Robotics Institute? He asked.
Daniil said, This entire complex is the Institute, Partner Elijah. You are seeing only a portion, and it is more thickly built up than is common on Aurora because it is a self-contained political entity. It contains home establishments, laboratories, libraries, communal gymnasia, and so on. The large structure is the administrative center.
This is so un-Auroran with all these buildings in view, at least judging from what I saw of EOS, that I should think there would be considerable disapproval.
I believe there was, Partner Elijah, but the head of the Institute is friendly with the chairman, who has much influence, and there was a special dispensation, I understand, because of research necessities.
Daniil looked about thoughtfully. It is indeed more compact than I had supposed. Than you had supposed? Have you never been here before, Daniil?
No, Partner Elijah.
How about you, Giscard?
No, sir, said Giscard.
Bailey said, You found your way here without trouble, and you seem to know the place.
We have been suitably informed, Partner Elijah, said Daniil, since it was necessary that we come with you.
Bailey nodded thoughtfully, then said, Why didn't Dr. Faustoff come with us?
And decided once again that it made no sense to try to catch a robot off guard, ask a question rapidly or unexpectedly, and they simply waited until the question was absorbed and then answered. They were never caught off guard.
Daniil said, As Dr. Faustoff said, he is not a member of the Institute and feels it would be improper to visit uninvited.
But why is he not a member?
The reasons for that I have never been told, Partner Elijah.
Bailey's eyes turned to Giscard, who said at once, Nor I, sir.
Did not know.
Were told not to know?
Bailey shrugged. It did not matter which. Human beings could lie, and robots be instructed.
Of course, human beings could be browbeaten or maneuvered out of a lie, if the questioner were skillful enough or brutal enough, and robots could be maneuvered out of instruction
if the questioner were skillful enough or unscrupulous enough, but the skills were different, and Bailey had none at all with respect to robots. He said, "Where would we be likely to find Dr. Vasilia Fastolf?"
Daniil said, "This is her establishment immediately before us."
"You have been instructed, then, as to its location?"
"That has been imprinted in our memory banks, Partner Elijah."
"Well, then, lead the way." The orange sun was well up in the sky now, and it was clearly nearing midday. As they approached Vasilia's establishment, they stepped into the shadow of the factory, and Bailey twitched a little as he felt the temperature drop immediately. His lips tightened at the thought of occupying and settling worlds without cities, where the temperature was uncontrolled and subject to unpredictable, idiotic changes. And, he noted uneasily, the line of clouds at the horizon had advanced somewhat. It could also rain wherever it wished, with water cascading down. Earth, he longed for the cities. Giscard had walked into the establishment first, and Daniil held out his arm to prevent Bailey from following. Of course, Giscard was reconnoitering. So was Daniil, for that matter. His eyes traversed the landscape with an intentness no human being could have duplicated. Bailey was certain that those robotic eyes missed nothing. He wondered why robots were not equipped with four eyes, equally distributed about the perimeter of the head, or an optic strip totally circumnavigating it. Daniil could not be expected to, of course, since he had to be human in appearance, but why not Giscard? Or did that introduce complications of vision that the positronic pathways could not handle? For a moment, Bailey had a faint vision of the complexities that burdened the life of a roboticist. Giscard reappeared in the doorway and nodded. Daniil's arm exerted a respectful pressure, and Bailey moved forward. The door stood ajar. There was no lock on Vasilia's establishment, but there had also been none, Bailey suddenly remembered, on those of Gladia and of Dr. Fastolf. A sparse population and separation helped ensure privacy, and no doubt the custom of non-interference helped, too. And, come to think of it, the ubiquitous robot guards were more efficient than any lock could be. The pressure of Daniil's hand on Bailey's upper arm brought the latter to a halt. Giscard, ahead of them, was speaking in a low voice to two robots who were themselves rather Giscard-like. A sudden coldness struck the pit of Bailey's stomach. What if some rapid maneuver substituted another robot for Giscard? Would he be able to recognize the substitution, tell two such robots apart? Would he be left with a robot without special instructions to guard him, one who might innocently lead him into danger and then react with insufficient quickness when protection was necessary? Controlling his voice, he said calmly to Daniil, "Remarkable the similarity in those robots, Daniil. Can you tell them apart?"
"Certainly, Partner Elijah. Their clothing designs are different, and their code numbers are different as well."
"They don't look different to me."
"You are not accustomed to notice that sort of detail."
Bailey stared again.
"What code numbers?"
"They are easily visible, Partner Elijah, when you know where to look, and when your eyes are sensitive farther into the infrared than human eyes are." "Well, then, I would be in trouble if I had to do the identifying, wouldn't I?"
"Not at all, Partner Elijah. You had but to ask a robot for its full name and serial number. It would tell you."
"Even if instructed to give me a false one?"
"Why should any robot be so instructed?"
Bailey decided not to explain. Giscard was, in any case, returning. He said to Bailey,
"Sir, you will be received. Come this way, please."